All right, Devosa, good morning. Let's begin. So today's daf is Ayin Beis. We're going to pick up the last line of Ayin Aleph on the Beis. Last line. So remember, again, the Gemara was talking about the different numbers of threads that were involved in the various called begodim. But it's not just begodim, it's not just garments, also various parts of the Beis HaMikdash. So the Gemara said, for example, Me'il Shneim Asar. So the Me'il again is like the tunic, the robe. I guess it literally translates as the robe. The robe of the Kohen Gadol. Oh, thank you. I see how you look at it. Thank you. Thank you. That the Shir this morning is sponsored by the Schoenfelds for the Aliyah of the Neshama of Baruch Yosef Ben Meir HaKohen Barry Plotkin. We hope that in the merit of our Talmud Torah's Neshama has an Aliyah. Okay. Thank you. To find a different place to actually, there's not really any better place to put this to be able to see it. Maybe if Chananya holds it. All right. So we'll say, so the me'il, the robe, was made out of, when we say Shnei Masar, it means 12 fold cords. And remember, again, we're going to be machalik between what the Gemara calls cords versus threads. A cord is made up of multiple threads. Threads could also be made up of multiple strands. So the Gemara says over here that the me'il was made of 12 fold cords. Where do we know this from? Tichsev v'asisa es me'il ha'efot, top of Ayin Beis, klil tcheles. Because the pasuk says you will make the me'il of the efod, klil tcheles, literally braided tcheles. V'yolif tcheles tcheles miparoches. And we make a zero shavu, we learn out tcheles tcheles from the paroches. Ma lahalon shisha, just like by the paroches. There were six strands for each thread. Afkan shisha. So too over here. There are also six. So again over here, since they were braided together in pairs, therefore that gives us our 12. So we have a gzer shavav tcheles tcheles, which tells me six strands per thread. Over here, again, we understand that they were braided in pairs, and that gives us our shnei masa, that gives us our 12-fold cord. So the Gemara says, v'nelev mishulyav v'rimonav. Why don't you learn out tcheles tcheles? From Shulav, it says Shulav means the hem of the garment. Rimona means the pomegranates. You know, on the bottom of the begadim of the Kohen was these, like, when you say pomegranates, they were woven pomegranates, and they also had tchelas in there. So why are you making a gzer shava to parochas? Why don't you make a gzer shava to either the hem or to the pomegranates? And we could say ma'ala halan shmona, just like over there were eight, afkan shmona. So now don't say six, say eight, to which the Gemara says, donin klimi kli, ve'in donin klimi tachshit kli. We make a gzer shava between one utensil and another, and we don't make a gzer shava between a utensil and between something that is a tachshit, an ornament for a utensil. I will say, what does that mean? So what the Gemara seems to be saying is that the paroches is a kli, and the me'il is a kli. Now, what does it mean that they're both kalim? So we'll say in this context, the way the Gemara is using the word kli is something that is makabel tumah. So just like the paroches is makabel tumah, the me'il is makabel tumah, but the rimonim, those pomegranates on the bottom, or the hem, which are just what we call a tachshit kli, ornamental, would not be makabel tumah. So the Gemara says, adrabah, because it's just the opposite. Donin gufo mi gufo, ve'in donin gufo mi alma. But maybe I'd say, no, let's compare things that are part of the body of the object itself, and not compare something that is extraneous. So, meaning this would be the counter argument. This would say, why don't we compare the me'il to the rimonim, or to the shuyah, to the hem, and that which again are all part of the garment, and don't compare it to the paroches, which is something extraneous. To which the Gemara says, that's why haynu da'aminon l'shar begadim shelo ne'emar b'hen sheish. So that's why we said in yesterday's daf that, remember, there's an extra word sheish. And that extra word, essentially, we use for the one garment that does not have sheish mentioned by it, which was the mi'il. Okay. Gemara says, parochas esrim v'arba. The parochas was made out of 24 fold cords. So the Gemara says, so where do we get this from? Dalid d'shisa shisa. So the first thing over here is each cord was composed of four types of thread, and each thread had six strands. So again, arba d'shisa shisa. Each cord composed of four types of thread. Each thread has six strands. And the Gemara says, Lodina v'lodina. This is a great line. Try to use this one at home. Lodina, discussion is over. Right? Lodina v'lodina literally means there's no dispute, and there's no judge. Matter closed. Nothing to talk about anymore. Choshen ve'evot, esrim u'shmona. The choshen. Remember the choshen itself. When we speak about the choshen is the breastplate. That was, of course, it was a gold backdrop, and it had again the 12 stones set inside of it. But when they talk about the choshen over here, what they're referring to the fact is that the gold plate was actually put on an embroidered background. That's what it means when it says choshen over here. So the Gemara says choshen. I'm sorry, I lost the place over here. Choshen the ephod. Ephod is the apron, right? So remember again, the Kohen Gadol wore like a type of apron, and the choshen was actually affixed to the apron itself. So both of these eschem ushmona are made of 28 fold cords. The Gemara says, "Milah, where do we know that from?" Dichsiv va'asisa choshen mishpat ma'ase choshev. So the Mara learns out from here. Arba d'shisa shisa. So we'll say same thing that we said before. Each cord was composed of four types of thread. Each thread had six types. Excuse me. Each thread had six different strands. So again, arba d'shisa shisa esen va'arba. That gives us our 24. Zov. Arba, you had then four strands of gold. Ha esrim v'timnia, that would give you your 28. I ve'ema zav nami shisha. Why do you say four strands of gold? Maybe it's six strands of gold. Amar of Acha, like we saw before. Amar of Acha, Rayakov, Amakra, v'katzatz psilin. The pasuk says you shall cut the strands. Psil, psilin, harikan dalet. The fact that it says psil would have been two. The fact that it says psilim is four, and therefore it teaches us that it's dafka four gold threads, not six. Again, that would be the minimum of psilim. And the ma'aseh that gives us our 28. Rav Ashi Amar Amrikra la'asos b'socha tcheles u'b'socha argamon. So both said the pasuk over here says vayiraku es pachi azav b'kiteis psilim la'asos b'socha tcheles u'b'socha argamon. What does it mean to do it within the tcheles within the argamon? Hechi na'avid. Navid arba the tray. So what should we do? If you want to say we make four sets of two gold strands and braid two gold strands into each thread, that's what it means. Navid arba the tray. Four sets of two gold strands and braid two gold strands into each thread. Havalu timnia, that becomes eight. Navid tray the tray. Utray the chad. I said, maybe you'll say, make two sets of two gold strands and braid two gold strands into each thread. And then one set of one gold strand that gets braided into one thread. So the Mara says, Va'asisa, shiu kol asiyos of shavos. That can't be because at the end of the day, the Torah says, Va'asisa, which means that everything must be made in the same exact way. Okay, so we'll say that concludes the discussion begun in the Mishnah about the various number of, if there's nothing else you take away from it, it's just the amazing craftsmanship that clearly went into making every aspect of the Mishnah. No one argued, right? So says the Gemara. Amar Achbar. So Rachba says the following. Amar Achbar, Amar Rav Yehuda. Hamikareya big de kuhuna, loke. Rabbi says, if somebody tears big de kuhuna, they are in violation of a lav. Right, which again, Rabbi said would mean that they would get malchus. So if you intentionally tear, this is obviously intentionally, if you intentionally tear big day kuhuna, subject to malchus. Shene emar, because the pasuk says, lo yikareya. The pasuk says, it shall not be torn. So the Gemara says, well, one second, maskif le ravacha bar Yaakov, the dilma hachikamra, maybe this is what it means to say, v'dilma hachikamra rachmara, maybe this is what the Torah means to say, na'avid le safa, make for the clothing a hem, ki hechi dilo nikra, in order that it shall not be torn. Meaning what the Gemara is suggesting over here is, Rabbi Huda wanted to say that lo yikareya is a lav. You shall not tear it. You shall not, and therefore, if you tear it, you're in violation of a lav. The Gemara in Aravach Barakov is saying, maybe not. Maybe what the Torah is saying is, construct the big day kuhuna in such a way that what? That it won't get torn, i.e. make a hem for it. To which the Gemara says, no. Miksiv shalo yikareya. Here's the problem. That would have been fine if the Torah would have said, shalo yikareya. Then it would have said, yes, make the hem in order that what? In order that it not be torn. But it doesn't say shalo yikareya. Instead, what does it say? Lo yikareya. It shall not be torn, which again, indeed means a lav. That if one intentionally tears big day kuhuna, the mice again, they're in violation of a lav. If one goes ahead and loosens the choshen from the ephod, so remember again, I don't have a picture of this, but just if you can imagine. So the choshen, remember, is the breastplate, which has the 12 stones, which is attached to a woven background. That woven background has chains on each side, so it's a square. It's chains on each side. Those chains are attached to the ephod. The ephod is the apron that the Kohen Gadol wore that had like shoulder straps that came over to like here and had like a belt that came until like a, not fully around his waist, but halfway around his waist. And the choshen attached to the rings on the ephod to keep it in place. So the Gemara says over here that if one loosens the choshen, me'ala ephod, if one loosens the choshen from the ephod, or v'hamasir bade aron, or one goes ahead and removes the poles of the aro, the halacha is loke. You get malke shine emar, because the pasuk says lo yizach. Lo yizach, literally, you shall not loosen. Lo yizach hachoshe me'ala ephod. You shall not loosen the choshe from the ephod. We'll say, obviously, this is talking about when the Kohen Gadol is wearing it. Obviously, if he takes off his big dekuna, that's something different. But while he's wearing it, there's an active prohibition to loosen it. Below yasuru. And furthermore, the Torah says, you shall not remove the poles from the aron. Maskif lo Rav Acha Yaakov raises a kasha and he says, V'dilma ki kam rachmano chadkinhu v'avdinhu shapir kedosh le yizach v'lo yasuru. So the Gemara says, again, Rav Acha, same kasha like we had before, maybe not, but the Gemara is suggesting is like this, that the phrase lo yizach and lo yasuru is a lav, is a lav. Torah is saying, you may not loosen the choshen. You may not remove the badim. Yeah. So now the Gemara is suggesting, maybe not. Maybe what the Torah is talking about is how you construct these items. Meaning, construct the big day kuhuna in such a way that what? That when the ephod is attached to the choshen, that it remains in place. Put the poles in the aron in such a way that they don't easily slide out. But perhaps the Torah is not actively telling me that if I do it, there's a lav. The Torah is just telling me to construct it in a stable fashion. To which the Gemara says, Miksiv shelo yizach v'shelo yasuru. So we'll say the Gemara gives the same answer that it said before. The Torah doesn't say shelo yizach in order that it not be loosened, and the Torah does not say shelo yasuru in order that the poles not be removed. Rather, what does the Torah say? Lo yizach, it shall not be loosened. Lo yasuru, it shall not be removed. What does that teach us? That teaches us that the Torah is framing this as a prohibition. This is a lot. It's an isser. And it's telling you that you may not loosen the choshen. You may not go ahead and remove the poles. So the Gemara goes right. Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Chanina, Rami Ksiv. So Rabbi Chanina, he contrasts the two psukim. On one hand, the pasuk says, "B'taba'os ha'aron yiyu abadim, lo yasuru menu." Literally, within the taba'os, within the rings of the aron, will be the badim, will be the poles. They shall not be removed. So I will say that pasuk seems to indicate that what? That you may never remove the poles from the aron. Whereas of all the other kelim, remember, the shulchan, the mizbeach, they also had rings in which to insert poles because that's how they transported these items. But whereas the other items, the rings, the poles are removed. The poles are removed when the item is placed at rest. The poles of the aron are to never be removed. So the Gemara says, on the other hand, uksiv, and the pasuk says, vohuva es badov betavaos. But yet the other pasuk says that what? That what? You shall place the badim, you shall place the poles into the rings. So we'll say this lashon of vehuva indicates something that is removable. So on one hand, the first pasuk indicates that you can't remove the poles. The second pasuk indicates that what? That the poles are removable. So which one is it? To which the Gemara says, Ha-ketza, it's not a kasha. Misparkin ve'ein nishmatin. The poles are loose, but they are not removed. Meaning, Abosai, lest you think that the poles of the aron, that the poles of the aron were placed, were fixed in place and were immovable. It's not true. They were placed, and once they were put within the rings, they are not to be removed, but the poles themselves were loose enough to be able to be pushed. Abosai, if you remember, again, this goes back to what we said before. Do you remember we learned earlier that the way the aron was situated in the Kodesh HaKadoshim is that the poles extended into the curtain. So according to many opinions, what they did is when they placed the aron at rest in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, they pushed the poles, as that's the Gemara saying over here. The psukim aren't contradicting each other. The poles must remain in place, but they were not, I don't know what the right word is, fixed in place. They weren't fixed in place. They were still movable within the rings themselves. Tiny Nami Hopi, your advice that supports this. within the rings of the Aron, you will have the bowls. Yachol lo yuzazinim koman. I might have thought that they can't move in their place at all. Talmud lomar v'huvas badav v'tabos. Therefore, the pasuk says, "You shall place the poles in the rings," which indicates that they're movable. Iva huva es badav yachol yu nichnasin v'yotzin. I might have thought that once the Torah says that you shall place the badim in there, which means they're movable, that you could take them in and put them out. Talmud lomar v'tabos aron yu abadim. Pasuk says that within the rings of the aron, the badim, the poles shall remain. Hakeitz, and how do I reconcile this? Misparkin ve'einon ve'ein nishmatin. What does it mean? It teaches us that they can be loosened. Loosenable, saying this context means they can be moved back and forth, but they are never removed. Amar Rabbi Chama v'Rabbi Chanina, my dichsev, what does it mean when the pasuk says, atzei shitim omdim? Suppose that this is talking about the construction of the Mishkan. So the construction of the Mishkan, it says that they used atzei shitim. Atzei shitim is acacia wood. Acacia wood. Omdim. Omdim literally means what? Standing. So what's the pshat? What does it mean standing? Sha'omdin derech gidilasan. Well, this is very interesting. So the first opinion the Gemara says is that when they would go ahead and use these planks, they would use the planks, they would stand up the planks in the way that the tree grew. So I guess the way they took these planks was from like across, they fashioned this out, tuned this out from a cross section of the tree. And so the planks were arranged literally in the way in which they grew from the ground. So the Gemara goes like, Davar Acher, another possibility. Shema'amidin eset sipuyon. Literally, they held up their coverings. Sipuyon means their coatings. Remember, the krushim, the boards of the Mishkan, were coated with gold. So what does it mean that they held up their coating? Look at Rashi. Shema'amidin eset sipuyon. Sipuy hazav ma'amidin ayidei masmaros. Loshon Acher, shlohit liu v'lo nafal sipuyon. So we'll say one of two possibilities. Either it means that the wood was strong enough, they wouldn't use whole sheets of gold. Apparently what they did is they used smaller sheets of gold and hammered them in with gold nails into the planks of wood. So the wood was able to support the nails. The other possibility is the wood never rotted. See, if the wood would have rotted, then it could have been that the gold plating would have fallen off. Shema Amidin, ultimately it holds up the gold coating. Davar Acher, another possibility, which is beautiful, Gemara. Shema Tomar, Avad Sivran. Ubatal sikuyon. I will say, I might have thought that now that the Mishkan was hidden away, right? Remember again, the Mishkan was, the Rashi says, Mishanignizu. The Mishkan was hidden away. When they built the Beis HaMikdash, Mishkan is hidden away. So what happens? I might have thought that once it's hidden away, Avad Sivran literally means it's lost its promise. Batal sikuyon, its hope has been negated. Talmud Lomar Omdim. Therefore, the Pasuk says that it's created Omdim. Sha'omdin li'olam ula'olamim. That the schus of the Mishkan stands for us for all eternity. So we'll say again, what the Gemara is saying is, lest you think that now the structure lost all of its meaning, because now again we had a Beis HaMikdash, and even more pronounced now there is no Beis HaMikdash. Kamashalom, no, the schus of the Mishkan, Omdim, stands for us for all eternity. So the Gemara goes by to Rabbi Chara, Rabbi Chanina. What's the meaning of the pasuk? Es bigdei hasrad l'sharis b'kodesh. So what's very interesting is the following. There's a big machlokes in general as to what Big Day Srad actually means. Does Big Day Srad refer to Big Day Kahuna, which is going to be the opinion of the Gemara over here? Or according to many, Big Day Srad refers to the coverings that they used to put over the utensils when they transported them. Because remember, again, when they would transport the utensils, this is all the utensils, you wanted to do it in a Bakavadic fashion, they would cover it, the beautiful covering. So many say that that's what Big Day Srad means. The Gemara is going to understand over here that Big Day Srad means the Big Day Kahuna. So the Gemara says, what does it mean? That's Big Day Srad is Sharis Bakodesh, from Mali, on the base. The Mali Big Day Kahuna, very beautiful Gemara today. Il Mali Big Day Kahuna, work not for the Big Day Kahuna, lo nishtayer nison ehen shal Yisrael, sorit upolit. Work not for the Big Day Kahuna, there would be nothing left of the enemies of the Jewish people, a sarit, a remnant, and a polit, and a literally a portion, or an escape portion. I will say what this means is the following. The Big Day Kahuna ultimately is what provides atonement for the Jewish people. Therefore, that's the Gemara's understanding over here, that's Big Day HaKodesh, L'Sharis B'Kodesh, the Gemara's understand, Srad, play on words, sarit. That is the Big Day Kahuna, ultimately the Avoda, that atones for the sins of the Jewish people. Rabbi Shmuel Bar Nachmani, Amr Debate.
Yes. Can you say, So Naam saying so it means Yisrael.
Correct. It's a euphemism for sinners. Correct. Correct. So the Gemara says, Rabbi Shmuel bar Nachmani Amar Devei Rabbi Shimon, Tana Begodim Shegorin Osan Mibriyasan, Kibriyasan, excuse me, Michalehen, Umisardin Mehen Klum. So this is very interesting. So what does it mean, Big Day Srad? Big Day Srad refers to clothing that is removed in a fully fashioned form from the loom. And ultimately, Umisardin Mehen Klum. Now, what does it mean? Look at Rashi. Umisardin Mehen Klum. Well, this is very interesting. So the Gemara says the beauty of the Beit HaKahuna is they were removed fully complete from the loom. From the loom. Pretty amazing. However, there was one little piece that was left unfinished. We'll see, it's not just such a little piece. One little piece that was left unfinished that ultimately had to be sewn. And what was that? Mahi, Reish Lakish Shamar, Elu Ma'ase Mecha. This refers to certain things that had to be crafted with the needle. Certain things that had to be crafted not on the loom, but with the needle. So the Gemara says, Ilu ma'ase mechad. Look at Rashi. Ma'ase mechad. Rashi says, Miktsaso hoyer ne'erak bifnei atzmo u'mechabro b'mechad. There was part of it that was sewn on its own by itself and was attached with a needle. So the Gemara says, Meisvei raises a kasha. Big day kahuna ein osin osam ma'ase mechad ela ma'ase oreg. Aye, but we learned that big day kahuna cannot, it should not be made by sewing, but rather is only made through weaving. So the Marsha Shina Amar, Ma'ase Oreg, because the Torah itself says, what is the Big Day Kuna? The Big Day Kuna is Ma'ase Oreg. It's made through weaving. No. So Abaye says, what does it mean? What's the part that was sewn? This refers to the sleeves. It's very interesting. So also when the Gemara says before that the Big Day Kuna were made fully complete on the loom, what that refers to like is the body of the garment. So for example, if you can imagine, let's say, the kisones, you know, the tunic, or the mi'il, or the robe. So these things were made, fully made on the body itself, was made fully on the loom. And what happened? Kedisanya beis yad shel Big Day Kuna ne'ereges bifnei atzma v'nidbekes im abeges. So both sides, the sleeves, which makes sense, the sleeves of the Big Day Kahuna had to be woven separately. Because obviously, also, you can't make, you can make the body of a garment, in my extensive experience in looming, right? So you could go ahead and you can make the body of the garment on the loom, but you can't make the body of the garment together with the sleeves. So what happens, they would make the body, they would make the sleeves separately, and then what happened? Benidbekes im habeget. And then how they would attach the sleeves to the regular beget. How would they do that? That would be done through sewing. So whereas the real Big Day Kahuna was ultimately Ma'ase Oreg, was made from weaving, the only part that was sewn was when they sewed together the sleeves and the body of the garment. Umaga'as ad pisas hayad. And Avosai, again, remember, Big Day Kahuna was often custom made, so the sleeves were supposed to reach to the palm itself, which I guess it was a little bit longer than conventionally we wear our sleeves today, but they would wear it until, again, the palm of the hand. Amar Rachma Rav Yehuda, Shalosh Aronos Asa Betzala. So Rachma says the name of Rav Yehuda. Betzala made three arons. I will say what this means over here is that the aron itself, the aron in which the luchos were placed, was an aron composed of three different boxes. That's what it means when it says that he made three aronos. One aron composed of three boxes. So the Gemara says, what is it? Emtzoi Shalitz. The middle one was made of wood. Pnimi Shal Zahav. The inner one was made of gold. And what, sorry, did I skip a line over here? Yeah, I skipped. I'm sorry. Emtsoi shall eat tisha. So the inner box was made of wood and was nine tefachim. Pnimi shall zohov shmona. The inner one, right? The inner one was made of gold and was eight tefachim. And what happens? Aschitzon asara umashahu. And the outer one, which was also made of gold. The outer one was made of gold. Look as well. So you have outside gold, inside gold, middle one wood. That was asara umashahu. That had a height of 10 tefachim and a little bit. I say, the Gemara says, v'hatanya. But we have another braisa that says that the height of the outer box was not 10 and a little bit, but rather 11 and a little bit. So a contradiction, which the Gemara says, no, lo kash, it's not a contradiction. Hakiman do amar yesh ba'avyav tefach. Hakiman do amar in ba'avyav tefach. There was a fundamental machlokes as to the dimensions of the outer box. Some say that the outer box, the bottom of the box, had a thickness of a tefach. The Rabbah said, if the outer box had a thickness of a tefach, then what? That essentially, that raises the height of the outer wall of the outer box by a tefach. So according to the Mandar, who says that the bottom box, the outer box, had a thickness on its bottom of, had a bottom thickness, a floor thickness of a tefach, that means the height of the wall of the outer box was what? Was 11 and a little bit. But according to the Man Darmu, who said that the outer box did not have a thickness of a tefach on its bottom, then Lamais again, it was 10 and a little bit. So it's not a contradiction. It's just two different shitos in the dimensions of the outer box. So the Gemara says the following. Here's what's interesting, is that the Gemara said before that the outer box was either 10 and a mashuhu or 11 and a mashuhu. So what is this little bit? So the Gemara answer is zer. Rabbah said this refers, zer literally means what? Literally means a crown. That if you look at the pictures, I'm surprised there aren't many pictures of this, but if you look at the pictures of the Aron, so you'll notice again, there's like an ornamental rim along the top of the outer box. We call that a zer. The Aron is not the only utensil that had a zer. The Shulchan had a zer. The Mizbeach had a zer. So this little ornamental border on top, this crown. So the Gemara says, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, this is a very beautiful Gemara. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Shlosha Zerim. There were three crowns in the Beis HaMikdash. And what were they? Shal Mizbeach, Vishal Aron, Vishal Shulchan. There was a crown of the Mizbeach, a crown of the Aron, and a crown of the Shulchan. So the Gemara says, look at Rashi for just a moment here. Shlosha Zerim, Rashi says, Naasu b'klei hakodesh, right? There were three crowns that were made on the utensils of the Beis HaMikdash. Shal Mizbeach simon lekeser kuhuna, the crown around the Mizbeach is symbolic of the crown of the priest, the crown of kuhuna. Shal Aron simon lekeser Torah, the crown on the Aron was a symbol of the crown of Torah. V'shal Shulchan simon lekeser malchus, and the crown around the Shulchan was a symbol of keser malchus, the crown of monarchy. Shal Shulchan hu simon laosher malachim, because the Shulchan represents material prosperity, representing monarchy. So the Gemara says the following. Back to the Gemara. I read a little bit ahead. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, shlosha zeirim heim. There are three crowns in the Beis HaMikdash. Shal Mizbeach, the crown of the Mizbeach. V'shal Aron, crown of the Aron, v'shal Shulchan, and the crown of the Shulchan. Shal Mizbeach zocha Aron v'notlo. So the crown of the Mizbeach, which represents the crown of the Kahuna, that Aron took. Aron was privileged to take that. Shal Shulchan, and the crown of the Shulchan, which represents what Rabbah say? Monarchy. Who took that? Zocha David v'notlo. David HaMelech took that, right? Monarchy ultimately really belongs to the Davidic line. What about the crown of the Aron? This is how beautiful this is. Shel Aron Adayan Munachu. The crown of the Aron, which is the crown of Torah, it's still waiting. Kol Harotza Likach Yavo V'yikach. Whoever wants the crown of Torah, it's yours for the taking. You want the crown of the Mizbech, you want the crown of the Kuhuna? I'm sorry. Either you have it or you don't have it, right? If your father has it, then you have it, then your children will have it. And if not, no matter how much you want it, you want the crown of the Shulchan, the crown of Malchus. Maybe if you're a descendant of David, it may be yours. But the crown of Torah is accessible to all. All you have to do is want it and take it.
Shema, symbolic,
all of this is symbolic. Correct. Shema Tomar Pachosu. I maybe you'll say that because it's sitting around, that shows that it's less important. Right? You see, because the crown of the Aron is already taken. Excuse me. The crown of the Mizbeach is already taken. The crown of the Shulchan is already taken. Maybe it's only over here because it's not worth as much. Talmud Lomar, Bi Melochim Yimlochu. Therefore, the Pasuk says, through me, literally kings will reign. Rashi says, the Godol HaMamlech Min HaMelech VaTorah Amra Mikrazeh. So literally, what the Gemara is saying is, this Pasuk is a reference to Torah. That those who go ahead and take the Keser Torah, they will be anointed. They will be crowned by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So in fact, although it's the one keser that remains accessible to us, it's also the greatest keser. It's the greatest crown man could achieve. Rabbi Yochanan Rami Ksiv. Rabbi Yochanan contrasted two psukim. On one hand, it says zar, vikarinon zer. So we'll say, here's what's interesting. This word that we're using to talk about crown is the word zer. But yet, interestingly enough, it's written, it's vocalized as if it had the yud, but in fact, it doesn't have the yud. Right? It's just Zayin Reish. So we'll say, what does that mean? Now, interesting enough, the word Zar means what? of stranger, a foreigner, an alien. So the Gemara says, Zocha na'asis lo zer. They both say, if you are Zocha, Rashi, what does it mean to be Zocha? Lilmod lishma ulakaima. If you are Zocha to learn Torah lishma and to uphold its tenets, then what? Then Torah will be a crown for you. Lo Zocha. However, again, if you're not Zocha, Chavosa means what? That you don't learn Torah lishma, you don't uphold its tenets, then Zarahimenu. Then Torah ultimately will become estranged from you. So we'll say again, you can learn all you want, but unless you have matching spiritual qualities, the Torah, if you have the matching spiritual qualities, the Torah will be a beautiful crown. If you don't have the matching spiritual qualities, the Torah will become alien and indifferent to you. So the Gemara goes right there. Rabbi Yochanan, in contrast to Pesukim, on one hand, the Pasuk says, Va'asi selecha aron etz, uksiv va'asu aron etz eshitim. So I'll say, what is it? So on one hand, the Torah says, God says to Moshe, you shall make an aron. You shall make an aron, which indicates that who's supposed to make the aron? Moshe Rabbeinu. On the other hand, what does the Pasuk say? Uksiv va'asu aron etz eshitim. They made the aron. So what happened? Moshe was supposed to do it, but the people ended up doing it. Here's the Gemara, beautiful Gemara. Mikan letamid chochom. Lo said, what do we see from here? That when you have a Talmud Chacham, I'm sorry?
You said Mitzuyin. Shouldn't it be Mitzavin?
Mitzavin, I'm sorry, correct. So, thank you. So, from here we see that the Talmud Chacham, ultimately, again, the members of his city are obligated to take care of him, right? Ultimately, yes, so Moshe was supposed to do it, but the people picked up the slack and did Moshe Rabbeinu's work for him in order that Moshe Rabbeinu should be freed from these responsibilities and devote himself to spiritual matters. Look at Rashi. Mitzuvin la'asos malachto. Sha'or b'tchila hitla kosuf ha'malachal. Continue on the left-hand side of Rashi. Moshe. Ve'achar kach etilu ala tzibor. Ve'af agav dekroi lav b'hai sidra ksidi. Asmachta ba'amud dekom. So we'll say, obviously, these psukim are not written in consecutive succession, but the Gemara is making a drush. So we'll say, we see from here that when there's a Talmud Chacham in the city, the members of the city should make sure that Talmud Chacham is not bothered by having to do basic things in order that he can go ahead and devote himself to matters of spirituality. So the Gemara goes weiter. The Gemara says, so the Torah spoke about the aron, that you should coat the aron on the inside and on the outside. Remember, both again, but what we said before, the aron was made of three boxes. The inside was gold, the outside of gold. So make the inside gold and the outside gold. What does that tell us? Amarava, kol tamid chacham, she'in tocho kibaro, eino tamid chacham. Any tamid chacham whose inside is not like his outside, he's not like a tamid chacham. I will say, so what does that mean? Does you have to be gold on your inside? You have to be gold on your outside. It's very easy to project an image of gold, but to be inside rotten wood. Right? Instead, you have to make sure that not only is your outside gold, but your inside is gold as well. Of course, the beautiful vart is, but the middle has to be that humble wood. Right? There always has to be that element of humility that accompanies us throughout life. Amar Abayi v'tim Rava Baruda, Nikra Nitav. Excuse me. Rava said, any Talmud Chacham, literally, whose inside is not like his outside, is not a Talmud Chacham. Amar Abayi v'itein Rava Barula, Nikra Nitav. He's called loathsome, disgusting. Shene'emar, af ki nitav v'ne'elach. So Rabbi says, it's quite an amazing idea. Tam Chacham, who is not Tocho Kibaro, is called loathsome, is called disgusting. Ish Shosa Kimayim Avlo. This is quoting, this is all Rabbi from the same Pasuk in Iyo. Av Kinita V'ne'elach Ish Shosa Mayim Avlo. The man who drinks the water of disgustingness. Amar Rabbi Shlomo Bar Nachmani, Amar Rabbi Yonasan, Mai Dichsiv, Lama Ze Mechir Biyad Ksil, Liknosa Chacha, L'chachma, V'leiv Ayin. So we'll say, the Gemara now quotes the Pasuk from Mishlei. Literally, why is there money in the hands of the fool to be able to purchase wisdom, and yet he has no heart? So the fool has the money, but he does not have to purchase wisdom. What does that mean? Ay lahem lison e'en shal tamidi chachamim. Woe to the enemies of tamidi chachamim. She'oskin b'Torah, who involve themselves in Torah, ve'en bahen yirashraim, and yet they have no fear of heaven. So also remember, whenever you see this lesson of enemies of Talmid Chachamim, that means the antithesis of what's the antithesis of Talmid Chacham? Talmid Chacham is not simply someone who learns a lot of Torah. Talmid Chacham is someone who learns a lot of Torah and internalizes the lessons and allows the Torah to influence who and what he is. Woe to those who learn Torah, but the Torah has no influence and no impact on them. Sha'oskim b'Torah, they learn Torah, ve'ein vahen yiras shamayim, and yet they have no fear of heaven. Machriz Rav Yanai, Rav Yanai would announce, Chaval ad delesli darta v'tara lidarte avid. Woe to those who have no courtyard, yet they construct an entranceway to the courtyard. I will say, what does that mean? So look at Rashi for just a moment. Darta is chotzer, v'tara lidarta avid, shatora ina ela shar likonispa, v'yirash shamayim. Lekach tzorah shetaktim al yirashim. So we'll say, amazingly enough, what's the goal? The goal is to get to the courtyard of Yerushalayim. Yerushalayim means awe and reverence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So how do you get to the courtyard of awe and reverence? You have to build for yourself an entranceway to the courtyard. What's the entranceway? The entranceway is Torah. Torah is a means. It's not an ends. So here you have Rabbi Yanai lamenting. There are so many people that think Torah is an ends. And so they just learn, but the learning doesn't do anything for them. So they build an entranceway to the courtyard, but what? They have no courtyard to enter into. Amar luhu Rava the Rabbanon. Rava said to the Rabbanon, "Bimatu saminaichu, I beg of you, lo tirsun tarti gehenim. Don't inherit for yourselves two gehenims." And we'll say, what are the two gehenims? So here Rashi explains. Literally, there are those who spend their lives toiling over Torah, and yet what? They never allow the Torah to influence them. So what happens? So the Torah doesn't influence them. So they don't have a good time in this world because l'maaseh they're trying to learn Torah, but it doesn't do anything for them, and therefore they have no benefits to reap in the world to come. Listen, you know, if you're not going to do it right, you might as well enjoy Olam Hazeh. Right? You'll have to suffer in the afterlife, but you might as well enjoy one world. To learn Torah not lishma, so you don't enjoy this world, and you don't get to enjoy the next world either. I'm Rabbi Yeshua Bar Levi, what's the meaning of the pasuk? V'zos ha-Torah sher sam Moshe. What does it mean that this is the Torah that Moshe placed? So the Gemara makes a play on words. The Gemara says, Zocha na'ases lo sam chayim. If you are worthy, Torah becomes for you an elixir, a potion of life. Lo zocha, however, again, if you are not zocha, na'ases lo sam misa. Torah becomes for you an elixir of death. Rabbi said, what the theme over here is that Torah is not an ends. Torah is a means. And so what Chazal are saying is that if your Torah doesn't influence you, if your Torah doesn't change you, if you don't, as a result of your learning, acquire Yerushalayim, if you don't acquire the courtyard, if it doesn't refine your character traits, then you're doing something wrong. And really what you're doing is you are demeaning and ultimately depreciating the value of Torah. Because if Torah just becomes a body of knowledge that doesn't influence me in the same way that other bodies of knowledge, then ultimately I'm draining the Kiddusha from it. So again, if you use it right, it's the elixir for life. If you use it wrong, it's the elixir for death. So behind the Amar Rava, do uman la sama de chaye. De la uman la sama de mos. Or else Rava used to say, do uman la. Do uman la means someone who knows how to use Torah. The Torah becomes for him the sam, the elixir of life. Someone who does not know how to learn Torah, sam de musa, becomes the potion of death. Amar Rabbi Shlomo Bar Nachmani, Rabbi Yonasan Ramiksiv. Rabbi Yonasan contrasts the psukim. What do the psukim say? Pikudei Hashem Yisharim Mesamchei Lev. The statutes of God, the commandments of God are upright, they gladden the heart. And on the other hand, Uksiv Imras Hashem Tzrufa. But on the other hand, it says that the words of God Tzrufa. I will say Tzrufa literally means to smelt, right? To put something in fire. So that doesn't sound very pleasant. Right? So on one hand, we say that the commandments of God are wonderful. They go out and they gladden the heart. On the other hand, it says that the words of God ultimately smelt, right? They put us in the parashat of Shat. Zocha, if you are Zocha. Zocha Rabosa means what? You learn Torah in the right way, and you allow the tenets and the precepts and the lesson of the Torah to influence who you are. Then, Samchaso. Excuse me, Misam Chaso, the Torah will gladden your heart. Lo Zocha, if you are not worthy, meaning you don't learn Torah the right way and you don't allow Torah to influence you, Sarfaso, the Torah will burn you up. Rish Lakish from Rish Lakish says, Migufei Dikra Nafka. We can see this from the Pasuk itself. Zocha, Sarfaso Lechaim. If you are Zocha, if you are Zocha, then ultimately the Torah forges you, it smelts you for life. Lo Zocha, Sarfaso Lemisa. God forbid, if a person is not Zocha, then Chas Shom Torah could be their very undoing. So the Gemara goes right to Yiras Hashem Torah Medes Lahad. The literally reverence of God, fear of God is pure and stands forever. Amar Rabbi Chanina, Zehalomed Torah B'Tara. We'll say, what does it mean that reverence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, fear of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Torah, is pure, and stands forever? Zehalomed Torah B'Tara. This refers to one who learns Torah in a state of purity. Well, how do you learn Torah in a state of purity? Mahi, no Seisha, the Acharkach Lomed Torah. Get married young. Get married young, marry young, and then afterwards spend your youthful years learning Torah. We'll say, what's the pshat? Because again, when a person is young, they desire all kinds of things. And so this way a person gets married, they have a permitted outlet for those desires that settles one's mind. And then one could go ahead and devote themselves to other things. As opposed to if a person is young but unmarried, so ultimately a person is preoccupied with all other kinds of thoughts and it distracts one from their ability to properly learn Torah. I'm Rabbi Chibar Abba. So, so beautiful. The Torah is ne'emenes. The Torah is believed that ultimately, again, it will give testimony to those who learn it. So, meaning after 120, the Torah itself, if I've learned it properly, will come and give testimony on my behalf. Ma'aser, okay, Rabbi Yossi, now the Gemara just jumps back over to the previous discussion. We're speaking about the curtains. It's actually speaking about over here, the Masach le'Pesach Ha'el. Well, so remember, in the Mishkan, there wasn't a door. So what was there? There was a curtain that stood at the entranceway. So the Torah over here describes that curtain as ma'ase rokim. It describes it as the work of an embroiderer. And it also says ma'ase choshev, the work of a weaver. So the Gemara says, I'm Rabbi Lazar, shirokmen b'makom shechoshev. So how do you reconcile this? What does it mean, rokim and choshev? Oh, they would embroider in the place where they outline. So you might understand over here that choshev means that what would they do? They would first kind of like make an outline on the curtain as the design they were going to make, and then they filled in the design there. Tana mishmid Rabbi Nechemya, rokeim ma'aseh mechat. So when the other opinion says, what does rokeim mean? Rokeim means needlework. Needlework, is that the right word? Needlework. Lefichach. Pirtzuf echad. And I will say again, now part of what they did, which was quite amazing, is the curtain had, according to this approach, the same image on both sides. Same image on both sides. So ma'aseh mechat means they were able to needlework and they were able to make the same image. Not like you think today, like today if you do a needle point, so you know on one side it's fine and on the other side is where you see all the threads. That's not what it was like. It was a same coherent image on both sides. Lefichach pirtzuf echad. So I will say, the way needlework works is you would be able to make one image on both sides. However, the other opinion says, choshev ma'aseh oreg. But according to the approach that says choshev means what, Rabbi Yossi? Choshev means a weaver. And what does a weaver do? The fichach shtei pirtzufos. So both sides, the amazing part about the weavers in Mishkan is what were they able to do? They were able to weave two different images on both sides. On both sides. So the Gemara is just pointing out over here that they had both of these things on the curtain up on the entrance of the Beis HaMikdash. On one hand, they had same image on both sides, but it also had two different images on both of the sides of the curtains. All right, the most I will stop over here.